Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Monday and Thursdays, 7 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, respectively. You can also pick it up on our flagship podcast, Podomatic, as well as Spotify, Amazon, and several other platforms. We are hosted by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp, and we are filling up fast, folks. July 14th to the 19th at the Singing Hills Christian Camp and Conference Center in Plainfield, New Hampshire. We have weekend retreat coming right up this weekend here in Alton, New Hampshire. That's a ladies' retreat, by the way, not a family retreat. We also have a family retreat at the last weekend in September at Camp Sentinel in Tuftonboro, New Hampshire. And we'll be at some homeschool shows. We'll be at the Homeschools of Maine all day Saturday. That's at Augusta at the National Guard Armory. Homeschools of Maine. And we'll be at a homeschool show in Massachusetts, Mass Hope in Sturbridge. That would be the end of April. We're also hosting Vince Edward Ellison. That would be in Greater Boston, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island, first from May 2nd to the 4th. And you can go to our Facebook page to get all that information. If you go to our website, we don't have all, we just have the events on our calendar. But for more details, you can go to our website, I should say our Facebook page, or just contact us and say, hey, I live in Rhode Island. I'd like to know where Vince will be speaking. And we'll put you in touch. We'll let you know about that, where that's happening. Anyway, there's a bill in New Hampshire that is they call it medical end of life, aid of dying. It always has these nice little acronyms, you know. I mean, not acronyms. What's the right word I'm looking for? It always sounds sort of sweet and not. It's the other terms, it's called assisted suicide. And for those of you who might be 50 and older, maybe 40 and older, you might remember Jack Kevorkian, Dr. Death. He was a big supporter of assisted suicide. And you could say if there was a hall of fame of suicide supporters or so-called assisted suicide, he'd be sort of the Babe Ruth of that hall of fame. And now I think presently there are 9 states that allow this so-called assisted suicide, and that includes Maine, Vermont, of course, California, Oregon, Washington State, Washington, D.C., which is not a state, but it is definitely a big city, New Mexico, Colorado, and even, I believe, Nebraska. And Nebraska has some. It's a little more difficult to get one there, but it is, I think some legislation is pending. But let's just look at the word suicide. Now, when you commit suicide, you are killing yourself. No one's helping you. There might be reasons why you do that. It may be you were diagnosed with a medical issue that you might not survive. You might be looking at painful experiences. You might have broken up with your girlfriend. Your wife might have left you, or your husband might have left you. You might have lost your job. You might have had a reversal. You might be facing some serious jail time. All kinds of terrible things happen to people in people's lives, and they commit suicide. And it's tragic when they do that. Now, some theologians say that if you commit suicide, you're going to go to hell no matter what, because you can't repent from something once you're dead. And others say, no, the blood of Christ covers that. I am not really sure on that one. But nevertheless, it's wrong to commit suicide. It's killing yourself. It's a violation of the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not kill. Of course, there's also what they call, death by cop, where you don't actually put the bullet in your head, but you commit a crime and you run out and you confront the police, knowing that with a gun, even though you have no intention of shooting, and they shoot you dead. That happens, I guess, kind of rarely. But suicide, its definition, and I've looked it up in Webster Dictionary of 1860. I look it up in some modern dictionaries, when you kill yourself. So I believe the term assisted suicide is an oxymoron, which is a contradiction, sharp, dull. That's what it means. So how can you assist somebody who kills themselves? In other words, if you assist them, it's no longer suicide. You've changed the definition. You are now part of that murder or an accessory to murder. And for an example, most of these assisted suicide, and they're not asking you. I think Kevorkian set up some kind of, somebody, for example, let's say somebody is paralyzed, or maybe they can only move their fingers. So they can actually, so you can set up a double gauge shotgun, and then wire it where just a pull of a button will fire that, so somebody could do that for you. They can put you in a chair and they can get that shotgun or whatever pet weapon you want to use, something that has a easy trigger. And they could set it up, and then they draw a little string. Then all you have to do is pull it and pull a switch, and bang, you're shut. That is a little more elaborate assisted suicide. Or you might carry somebody up to the 20th floor of a building, and then they're in a wheelchair, and they were able to roll out of the wheelchair and plunge to their death. That's a more gruesome type of suicide. I think in this case, it's you're an accessory to murder. You're the one that's actually committing the murder. Then there's the drug, the pill, the death pill, and that's what most of these bills or states allow. So you go to a doctor, and the doctor says, "Gee, you've got terminal cancer. You've got whatever is wrong with you. And if you want to commit suicide, I can write you a prescription." So that doctor is now, is he an accessory before the fact? Or is he an accomplice to that murder? So it's not really a suicide at that point. It's a little confused. It's a little interesting, legal wise. And then that prescription is then brought to a drugstore or called in. That's what a lot of times they call in prescriptions or email them in. And the pharmacist says, "Oh yeah, this isn't for his headache or for her back pain. This is to kill her." And so he fills that prescription, and then the clerk, who actually, has to take the money, ask for the information, "Oh, I need your ID." Okay, you go. That clerk, if that clerk knows what's in that prescription, and most do, because they'll say, "Oh, by the way, you got to read the instructions. You have any questions? It says here, take one every 4 hours for pain or as needed, or take one or two to kill you dead. And then have a next of kin come in and declare you dead." And by the way, the people that might be in the room when that person does it, are they all accessories to murder? So this is really a not just a slippery slope. It is really, we're already halfway down the slope. And of course, what seems, well, this is an extreme example. It doesn't happen that often. We don't really, it's something that it should be an option for people. Well, people can kill themselves without the assistance of the state. And this is what, which, as tragic as that is, this is what makes it really terrible, is the state gets involved and say it's okay to do this. Then they regulate it, and where it was, well, it's just for a handful of people. There's all kinds of protection. They can appeal it. But what if you've got people who are now in charge of that person's decision making? You give that person power. You give me power of attorney over a parent, or not me. I'm just speaking. You give a ch children. Oh, and that poor mom and poor dad, they're not doing well, and they're in a lot of pain. Oh, but guess what? When they kick off, we get the house. We get a mortgage-free house. We get that vacation play. Oh, you don't think that's going to be happening? And in Canada, I mean, it's so bad there. It's the whole still country that if you're a veteran, they're encouraging you to commit suicide. Oh, it's going to be costly. So you're already 85 years old or 90 years old, or you lost a limb in Afghanistan, and you're in a lot of pain. And it's just best if you commit suicide. It'd be a good thing. It will spare the state or this government all this expense and all the agony you have, and your miserable existence. Your wife left you. Your kids don't want to talk to you, and you're just better off dead. That is evil, folks. Now, it's interesting because the country. This is sort of a fad, a death cult fad, and I don't know if it'll end. Sometimes fads last a few weeks, a few months, a few years. Sometimes a decade. Sometimes even a generation. But there was a fad called eugenics. It was very popular, I would say that probably started, it might have been around since the fall of man, since we have a sin nature, but the idea that eugenics is the idea of creating a better race, you know, make sure you only marry people that have the same color hair or the same academic or intellectual abilities. You don't want to marry somebody who may have a illness in the family and all these things. And of course, it's taken to an extreme that led to what we saw in Nazi Germany. But the Nazis didn't learn it on their own. They got it from the United States. And I'm just doing, I wrote the book on Planned Parenthood. It's the and its legacy of death, the racist roots of Planned Parenthood and its legacy of death. And all the top people were part of that were all into eugenics, all back from the 1890s to up until the 1970s. Dr. Gamble, you know, the Human Betterment Society, the Arkansas Eugenics, and most of these groups that were called eugenics societies ended up becoming Planned Parenthood chapters, like in Arkansas, for example. And so you had all these folks pushing this, and that led to forced sterilization laws. So I'm doing a little research, and there were over 30 states that had forced sterilization laws. And then it went, there was a case from Virginia that went to the Supreme Court, Buck, I think it's Buck versus Mann, but it was this young woman. She was declared unfit to have children by the state of Virginia, went to the US Supreme Court. Their court ruled in favor of the state. And I think it was Olive Wendell Holmes Jr., not the doctor and the poet, but the long-term Supreme Court justice. He says something to the effect that three generations of imbeciles or is enough. Going to find out that this young lady was perfectly normal. She didn't have any defects, or even though even not to say that it was right to do that if she had the defects, but the basis of the law was to prevent idiocy, imbeciles, feeble-mindedness. That's some of the terms they used. Genetic diseases and so forth that we didn't want. They didn't want them to breed, so we would and sometimes they weren't issued a gift certificate. I mean, a wedding certificate or wedding license, unless they agreed. Now, I think the number altogether during this, from the early like 1910 up until the early 70s, there was something like 60,000 sterilizations in the United States. Could have been more than that. Now, no, these are forced. So we're not talking about voluntary. Someone wants to volunteer to be sterilize, and they still do that today. At Nazi Germany got a real head start. They picked it up a little bit. Well, they didn't come to power until 33, and within several years, they had over 350,000 forced sterilizations. It actually came to an end. The German people did not accept it, did not want it. And believe it or not, of all people that led the charge against it was a Heinrich Mueller, the head of the Gestapo. He had a child that I think was Down syndrome. And there was a Catholic priest whose name I don't recall. He was a very outspoken critic of this in Germany. And they sort of made a deal that if he would keep his mouth shut about the Nazis, then we would qu they would quietly stop this forced sterilization. And that's what happened. So it took a while for this fad to end. Again, in the early 70s, there were still a few states that had it. And it wasn't just black people. The statistics are really hard to find as actually, you know, the reason who they were, but it was mostly women who were sterilized. Now, there were probably a disproportionate number of black women, although I can't say that for sure. But again, this leads to, and thankfully, a lot of these states rescinded. And in New Hampshire, they got their law passed in 1929, and they rescinded it in 1959. So it took all that time. And again, the numbers are 60,000 with a country, a big country like ours. It may not seem like a lot, but it's a tragedy that any of these happened. This is what happens when you give states the power over people, life and death. Now we have abortion, and that became, look, we've always had abortion. There's, again, since the fall of man, people have been doing bad things, murdering and killing and aborting and many other sins. But it was first legalized California and New York, both by, led by Republican governors at the time, Rockefeller, Nelson Rockefeller, and Ronald Reagan. He Ronald Reagan ch did change his position on that, thanks to Phyllis Schlafly and Dr. Mildred Jefferson. At least he changed it publicly, whether or not he ever changed his view, you know, behind closed doors, and that no doubt helped him get a lot of votes of pro-life people. But the first two states to not say they had laws against abortion, and they were decriminalized, so it made it legal to kill your baby. And some states, when after the Roe v. Wade decision, which should have never have been, these states should have said, "Hey, this is a decision based on a case." And the woman in question, who by the way became a pro-life activist, she lied. She was the Roe, and Wade was the Attorney General of Texas, who obviously his name was on the case. Roe was Norma Rae McCovey, who was used by the abortion industry as a case. They didn't care about her. She was at the time a teenager. She was a drug addict. She was bisexual. She got pregnant. She claimed she was raped. She wasn't raped, but she claimed that. You know, just claiming you were, anybody can say, "Oh, I was raped. Did you report it?" "Oh, no, I don't want to report it. That happened many years ago, but I got an abortion based on that." And that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they ruled, I think it was 6-3 or 7-2. It was okay. So all the laws at that time, every state, 48 states had laws against abortion, and then it allowed them to regulate abortions after 24 weeks. And thankfully, most of these late-term abortions are relatively rare. I just watched a documentary. It was after Tiller, I think it was Tiller, the abortion doctor that was shot and killed in a church. Imagine this guy, late-term abortion doctor. And he goes to, he was a good churchgoer. But there was only a handful of doctors, so-called, I call them doctors, but they're really executioners. They're medically trained executioners that can perform abortions after 24, 25 weeks. But nevertheless, that can still be available even after the baby is born. And it's actually easier. The baby's born, they let the baby die. They call it comfort care. So the idea is to have an abort, get the baby dead before the baby's born. Once the baby's born, as oh gee, we messed up. The chemicals didn't kill. The baby should have been born. They just leave the baby out to die, and they're okay with that. That just shows you the evil depravity. When I watched this documentary, it was sent to me by my Julie Wilkinson, and it was not sympathetic to the pro-life industry whatsoever. And it's a documentary, but they probably had some patients, and they were just playing God. "Well, my baby, I don't want to do this, but my baby, the doctor said my baby's going to born with birth defects, and I'm, you know, it'd be tough life, so better to kill the baby, you know, to abort the baby, but I really don't want to do it. And oh, I want to adopt a baby, but man, then I feel bad about it. I'll feel guilty, so we'll just take the baby." And you look at a 25-week baby. That's a full, just about a full-grown baby. You know, I have a friend whose granddaughter would weigh a little, like a pound and a half, at birth, and that little baby is surviving, and so they can live, especially with today's modern medicine. But getting back to this, medical, really, it's really suicide, but I call it really death. And you know, New Hampshire has this wonderful motto. It's called "Live Free or Die." It was the great General John Stark. He was the hero of the Battle of Bennington, which was a major, major battle. It was that led to eventually the Battle of the Saratoga, and the British losing their influence in pretty much New England and New York. And he was there was a reunion. I think it was 1810 or so, and he was pretty much up in years and couldn't make it to the reunion. And they asked him, and he said something to the effect that, you know, live free. He said, "If you want to toast the men, say there were things worse than death, live free or die." And that was the motto that New Hampshire adopted back in the 60s and early 70s. It really should be, if the New Hampshire passes this, and it passed the House by 3 votes, 24 people weren't available to vote, which is troubling because it may have made the difference. And I think they, when it's a close vote, they can reconsider the vote, and it wasn't enough to reconsider it. So it's going on to the Senate. And the Senate has a 14 Republicans, 10 Democrats. And by the way, not every single Democrat supported this. I have to commend the Democrats that voted, including my relative, Steve Shurtleff, voted against this. And there was it was sponsored by six Democrats and three Republicans. You see, some of these libertarians, and I know I do have a lot of respect for some libertarians. When they have a solid perspective on things, that, it's more than just economics. Economics, free market economics is essential to a free country and a vibrant economy. But you have to have a moral, this has to be moral restraint there. And there are, I call them, they're not really libertarians, this group, they're libertines. And these libertarians are okay with the state sanctioning basically murdering people who are not necessarily ill, but depressed. And that is not such a good thing. So it's hard to reconcile pure libertarianism when you give more power to the state. And this is what's happening. You're giving power to the state. And you're also giving power to not just the state, but judges. The judges will say, well, okay, here's somebody that wants to commit suicide. Well, and there's someone saying, well, the only reason why is because their caretaker or their person with power of attorney, their son or daughter or wife, they want this guy out of the way. They don't want to be burdened with him. So that's why they're doing it. And he agreed to it. He didn't want to be a burden. So he's going to take this death pill and kill himself. It's really, it's a sign of a not just slippery slope. We're already down the slope, a long ways down. And so my thought is if this does pass. Now, the governors didn't say he would vote against it or vote in favor of it. He's Sununu is a moderate Democrat, a moderate Republican. He's very much pro-abortion. It's okay with all the homosexual agenda and that stuff is he's okay with that. So it's a good chance. Sometimes he'll surprise you and do the right thing. And he's now a lame duck, so he's not going to get reelected. But there'll be a legacy. It'd be a real sad thing if New Hampshire becomes the third New England state. This was even shot down in Massachusetts, and it's very interesting that here in Massachusetts, so well, I'm in New Hampshire, but I remember when it came up for a vote on the referendum, and the pro-death, there was millions of dollars thrown into the pro-death vote. And not as much in the pro-life, but nevertheless, it was defeated, not by a wide margin. See, a lot of people don't have all the facts, and then people will hear the emotional appeals. Well, somebody's suffering, somebody's handicapped, all these different things to justify. And so they make this emotional case. What if it were you or a loved one, and they couldn't speak anymore? They couldn't do this, or they were facing a pain or a future of this or the future of that. Again, someone kills themselves, that's their business. But now, when you so-called assist that, now it becomes everyone else's business. Back in West Roxbury, every so often, a neighbor would get into a big argument with his girlfriend, middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning. And, mind your own business was what he'd mind your own business. Well, it becomes everybody's business at 3 o'clock in the morning when you're waking up the neighborhood. It's you have an argument with your wife or girlfriend behind closed doors. Nobody hears it. No one's business. You have an argument in the front yard at 3 in the morning, and everybody's wakes up. It becomes our business. You make it our business. So yeah, it becomes our business. We have an obligation, a moral obligation, and. Again, there's some other states too that are with legislation that's being considered on this subject. I just went online. I put assisted suicide in the United States. When you look at countries in Western Europe, now Western Europe is unfortunately it's a dying con it's a dying a nation of a group of nations that are dying, and it starts off with the moral and spiritual death. The churches become left wing. They no longer support. Born again Christian or salvation by grace or whatever the tenets of whatever they teach in these different churches, they become very leftist or people just leave. They may not, the churches may not change their theology. It's just that the people, the next generation, hey, you've been educated in government schools where they promote atheism and communism. So Christianity went, we want nothing to do with what our parents believe. And now you have Muslims coming in, and Muslims do have a strong belief system, and you'll see which what will prevail. And they don't abort their children, and they have big families. So you do the numbers, and you'll see who'll be running these Western nations if there's not a strong revival and spiritual renewal, not just revival, but a renewal. And there are some people that have, they have don't. I heard a incredible missionary, Chris Granigan, at our church here in Alton. He's a Liberty University professor. He travels to these nations where the gospel's never even heard. And he was in, it wasn't India, it was Nepal. And he's speaking to one of the people there, and they asked him, "Do you know that who Jesus is?" And they got this old man that's lived in the village forever. And he said, "No, I've lived here for 7 years. I don't know any Jesus. He might be in the next town over." They've never heard the name. I think that might be the case in some areas, even in this country, because of the, several generations of atheism and agnosticism that have turned people not just just to have no concept of it. I remember this was back in the 90s when I lived in the Hyde Park section of Boston. It was Good Friday, and there was some young teenagers in the neighborhood, and I had a good I had a good relationship. I'd chat with them every so often, and I asked, "What are we celebrating? What's Easter about? What are we celebrating?" I prefer the term Resurrection Sunday, but I asked, "What are we celebrating Easter?" And there was white kids, Hispanic kids, black kids, maybe about seven or eight. Only one knew. "Oh, that's Jesus, the one Jesus rose from the dead." The other ones had no idea. Church right down on the foot of the street, the Protestant church where I was raised, Catholic church, maybe a 10-minute walk from my house. And I think several in a few different in different directions, a couple of other churches of various denominations. What impact did they make in the community when they can't, when children don't even know, teenagers don't even know we celebrate Easter? Something to do with a bunny, something to do with candy and Peter Rabbit and all that? No, it has something to do with the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And that's really, again, it's our fault. And I say, "Oh, not necessarily you or me, but it's because there's just not enough of not enough evangelism going on." Well, gee, we're running out of time here. It's we do this, we try to get this done in 29 minutes and 30 seconds to make our producer make it easier for him. So anyway, I do encourage you, the Cornerstone in New Hampshire, it's a pro-life group. Cornerstone, I think it's the Cornerstone Institution. Just put Cornerstone New Hampshire. They have an incredibly good article about the subject on their face, I'm sure on their website. And for those of you, we want to thank you for listening. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shirtliff. And please visit our website, campconstitution.net. Check our calendar. There's a link, and it has the events that we've been involved in. And we have events going on all the time in mostly New England, up the Northeast, but mainly in New England. And we'd love to come to your event if you invite us. Check us out, campconstitution.net. And until next week, may God richly bless you.